All right. Good morning. The January 23rd, 2025 public meeting of the California Air Resources Board will come to order. Board Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Dr. Balmes. Mr. De La Torre.
Here.
Mr. Eisenhut.
Here.
Senator Flores.
Here.
Assemblymember Garcia. Mr. Guerra.
Guerra here.
Ms. Hurt.
Hurt present.
Mr. Krakow.
Here.
Dr. Pacheco Werner.
Here.
Supervisor Perez. Mr. Rechtschaffen.
Here.
Dr. Shaheen.
Here.
Senator Stern. Ms. Takborian.
Here.
Chair Randolph.
Here.
Madam Chair, we have a quorum.
All right, thank you very much. We will first cover our housekeeping items before we get started this morning. We are conducting today's meeting in person, as well as offering remote options for public participation both by phone and in Zoom. Anyone who wishes to testify in person should fill out a request to speak card available in the foyer outside the boardroom. Please turn it into a board assistant prior to the commencement of the item. If you are participating remotely, you will raise your hand in Zoom or dial *9 if calling in by phone. The clerk will provide further details regarding how public participation will work in just a moment. For safety reasons, please note the emergency exit to the rear of the room through the foyer. In the event of a fire alarm, we are required to evacuate this room immediately and go down the stairs to the lobby and out of the building. When the all clear signal is given, we will return to the auditorium and resume the hearing. A closed captioning feature is available for those of you joining us in the Zoom environment. In order to turn on subtitles, please look for a button labeled CC at the bottom of the Zoom window, as shown in the example on the screen now. I would like to take this opportunity to remind everyone to speak clearly and from a quiet location, whether you are joining us in Zoom or calling in by phone. Interpretation services will be provided today in Spanish for both in-person and Zoom attendees. If you are joining us using Zoom, there is a button labeled Interpretation on the Zoom screen. Click on that interpretation button and select Spanish to hear the meeting in Spanish. If you are joining us here in person and would like to listen to the meeting in Spanish, please speak to a board assistant and they will provide you with further instructions. I want to remind all of our commenters to speak slowly and pause intermittently to allow the interpreters the opportunity to accurately interpret your comments.
Thank you, Chair Randolph. We'll repeat that in Spanish now for the benefit of our Spanish listening audience. Muy buenos días a todos que nos acompañan en español. Queremos dejarles saber que tenemos servicios de interpretación disponible para el día de hoy, ambos para los que participen virtualmente y los que estén presenciales también. Si nos acompaña por medio de la plataforma Zoom, por favor busque el botón en la parte inferior de su pantalla que dice Interpretation o Interpretación, selecciónelo y de ahí seleccione su idioma Spanish o Español. Si nos acompaña aquí en persona y desea escuchar el programa en español, por favor hable con un funcionario de la Junta y se le proporcionará instrucciones adicionales. Les recordamos a todos, por favor, que cuando comenten, den su comentario detenidamente y que pausen intermitentemente para que los intérpretes puedan capturar todo lo que se diga. Muchísimas gracias. Thank you, Chair. Back to you.
Thank you so much. I will now ask the board clerk to provide more details regarding public participation.
Thank you, Chair Randolph. Good morning, everyone. I'll be providing additional information on public participation for today's meeting. We will first call on in-person commenters who have turned in a request to speak card, and then call commenters who are joining us remotely. If you are joining us remotely and wish to make a verbal comment on one of today's board items or during the open comment period at the end of today's meeting, you must be using Zoom webinar or calling in by phone. If you are watching the webcast on CalSPAN but you wish to comment remotely, please register for the Zoom webinar or call in. Information for both can be found on the public agenda for today's meeting. To make a verbal comment, we will be using the raise hand feature in Zoom. If you wish to speak on a board item, please virtually raise your hand as soon as the item has begun to let us know you wish to speak. If you are using a computer or tablet, there is a raise hand button. And if you are calling in on the telephone, dial *9 to raise your hand. Even if you previously indicated which item you wish to speak when you registered, you must raise your hand at the beginning of the item to be added to the queue. When the comment period begins, the order of commenters is determined by who raises their hand first. We will call each commenter by name and will activate each commenter's audio when it is their turn to speak. For those calling in, we will identify you by the last three digits of your phone number, and we will announce the next three or so commenters in the queue so you are ready to testify when we come to you. Please note, your testimony will not appear by video. And for all commenters, please state your name for the record before you speak. This is especially important for those calling in by phone. Each commenter will have a time limit of 2 minutes, although this may change at the chair's discretion. During public testimony, you will see a timer on the screen. For those calling in by phone, we will let you know when you have 30 seconds left and when your time is up. And for anyone giving verbal comments today in Spanish, please indicate so at the beginning of your testimony and our interpreter will assist you. During your comment, please follow any instructions the interpreter provides. And please note your time will be doubled if you require Spanish interpretation. To submit written comments, please visit CARB's Send Us Your Comments page or look at the public agenda on our webpage for links to submit your comment. Written comments will be accepted on each item until the chair closes the record for that board item. And if you experience any technical difficulties, please call 805-772-2715 so that an IT person can assist. Thank you. I'll turn it back to Chair Randolph.
Thank you. Before we begin today's agenda item, I want to take a moment to acknowledge all of those impacted by the devastating wildfires in Southern California, including our own board colleague, Gideon Krakoff, and his family who were impacted, and CARB staff who were displaced and who are supporting family who were displaced, and including those who are right now evacuated due to the Hughes fire. And I also want to make sure and thank the amazing first responders from all over California, from other states, from other countries who stepped in to help us during this time. California, as you know, is taking an all-hands-on-deck approach to the response and recovery, and we at CARB have offered support to the South Coast Air Quality Management District, whose staff are working around the clock on local air monitoring and response efforts. CARB has leveraged its California Smoke Spotter app to provide information on smoke conditions and to help people find clean air centers. Our Smoke Ready California campaign also provides key information on how to stay safe from wildfire smoke. And we were able to quickly pivot to ease restrictions on portable generators to make it easier for manufacturers to meet the increased demand for those generators. Our hearts are with our with colleagues and friends and family and residents in Southern California, and we will continue to support the state's response as the rebuilding process gets underway. All right, turning to our agenda, the first item on the consent calendar, as noted on the public agenda, is item number 25-1-1, a proposed research contract with the University of California, Berkeley, titled Assessing Health Impacts of Brake and Tire Wear Emissions in Overburdened Communities of the San Joaquin Valley. This contract will be the first study to examine the effects of brake and tire wear emissions on ambient exposures and public health impacts in the San Joaquin Valley. If you are here with us in the room and wish to comment on this item, please fill out a request to speak card as soon as possible and submit it to a board assistant. If you are joining us remotely and wish to comment on this item, please click the raise hand button or dial *9 now. We will call on both in-person and remote commenters when we get to the public comment portion of this item. This item is listed on the agenda to comply with board approval requirements in Government Code Section 1091. Board Member Balmes will abstain from the discussion and vote because he is affiliated with the same department at the University of California, Berkeley, as the contract's principal investigator. Dr. Cliff, will you please summarize this item?
Thank you, Chair Randolph. Many overburdened communities in California are exposed to high levels of traffic emissions, including non-tailpipe emissions, such as brake and tire wear particles. While CARB's regulations and advances in vehicle technology have reduced tailpipe emissions greatly, non-tailpipe emissions have become a growing percentage of traffic pollution. Most studies of brake and tire wear to date have focused on particle components emitted from the tailpipe rather than community exposure to brake and tire wear particles in ambient air. Existing research on health impacts of brake and tire wear particles, including a study contracted by CARB, has highlighted concerns about potential health impacts, but more studies are necessary. This contract is the first to examine brake and tire wear exposures and health impacts in ambient air in the San Joaquin Valley. This contract will help CARB understand the impacts of brake and tire wear emissions on health, particle toxicity, and exposure disparities, including impacts in vulnerable communities with high traffic exposures. The investigators will develop advanced exposure models to determine the health risks in these communities, particularly for respiratory, cardiovascular, and birth outcomes. Key contract outcomes will include analysis of exposure levels and health outcomes at the zip code level or smaller scale in the San Joaquin Valley, and comparison of exposures and impacts in overburdened areas to other areas. A technical advisory group of scientific experts and community representatives will provide input to the contract implementation. This group, along with CARB staff, will provide input on the study's design, methodology, and health analysis. The contract team will also plan and conduct community meetings before the study begins and after the results are completed to keep the public informed. The investigators will coordinate with ongoing studies on brake and tire wear, including the multiple air toxics exposure studies, or MATES 6, under development at the South Coast Air Quality Management District. MATES 6 will monitor brake and tire wear in ambient air and estimate health risks. This proposed contract was reviewed and recommended for approval by the Research Screening Committee. CARB staff recommend that the board approve funding of the proposed research contract with the University of California, Berkeley, entitled Assessing Health Impacts of Brake and Tire Wear Emissions in Overburdened Communities of the San Joaquin Valley, and $850,000 is requested to fund this contract. This concludes my summary of the item. Thank you.
Thank you. Board Clerk, are there any commenters signed up to comment on this item?
No.
All right, I will now close the record on this item. Do I have a motion and a second to approve this item and have staff proceed with executing this contract?
Second.
Board Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Mr. De La Torre.
Aye.
Mr. Eisenhut.
Aye.
Senator Flores. Senator Flores. Mr. Guerra.
Aye.
Ms. Hurt.
Aye.
Mr. Krakow.
Yes.
Dr. Pacheco Werner.
Yes.
Supervisor Perez. Mr. Rechtschaffen.
Yes.
Dr. Shaheen.
Aye.
Ms. Tech-Borian?
Yes.
Chair Randolph?
Yes.
Madam Chair, the motion passes.
All right, thank you. The next item on the consent calendar, as noted on the public agenda, is item number 25-1-2, proposed research contract with the University of California, Berkeley, titled Reducing Exposure with Air Cleaners and Technology React in At-Risk Communities. If you are here with us in the room and wish to comment on this item, please fill out a request to speak card as soon as possible and submit it to a board assistant. If you are joining us remotely and wish to comment on this item, please click the raise hand button or dial *9 now. We will call on both in-person and remote commenters when we get to the public comment portion of this item. This item is listed on the agenda to comply with board approval requirements in Government Code Section 1091. Board Member Shaheen will abstain from the discussion and vote because she is affiliated with the same department at UC Berkeley as the contract's principal investigator. Board Member Balms will also abstain from the discussion and vote because he is affiliated with the same department at UC San Francisco as the lead investigator of a subcontractor in the study. Dr. Cliff, will you please summarize the item?
Thank you, Chair Randolph. CARB is proposing to enter into an $850,000 two-year contract with the Regents of the University of California, Berkeley, for the project entitled Reducing Exposure with Air Cleaners and Technology, or REACT, in At-Risk Communities. The study will be a collaborative partnership between UC Berkeley, UC San Francisco, and two local environmental justice organizations, Bayview Hunters Point Community Advocates and Brightline Defense. The primary objective of this study will be to investigate the air quality and health impacts of deploying portable air cleaners and air quality sensors at residences in the Bayview Hunters Point community. It is known that when used properly, portable air cleaners are effective in lowering indoor PM2.5 levels. However, little is known about how to maximize the efficacy of these devices. CARB expects to leverage the results to inform communities on best practices to reduce exposures to pollutants in the indoor environment. This contract will provide a better understanding of indoor air quality in impacted communities like Bayview Hunters Point, and will further the board's goals of improving air quality and reducing public health disparities for overburdened communities. This proposed contract was reviewed and recommended for approval by the Research Screening Committee. This concludes my summary of the item. Thank you.
Thank you. Board Clerk, are there any commenters on this item?
No.
I will now close the record on this agenda item. Do I have a motion and a second to approve this item and have staff proceed with executing this contract?
Move approval.
Second.
All right. Board Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Mr. De La Torre.
Aye.
Mr. Eisenhut.
Yes.
Senator Flores. Senator Flores. Mr. Guerra.
Aye.
Ms. Hurt.
Aye.
Mr. Krakow. Mr. Krakow.
Sorry about that. Yes.
Thank you. Dr. Pacheco Werner.
Yes.
Supervisor Perez. Mr. Rechtschaffen.
Yes.
Ms. Tekborian. Chair Randolph?
Yes.
Madam Chair, the motion passes.
All right, thank you. The next item on the consent calendar, as noted in the public agenda, is item number 25-1-3, proposed 2024 amendments to area designations for state ambient air quality standards. If you would like to comment on staff's proposal as posted on CARB's website, please raise your hand in Zoom or dial *9 now. When we get to the public comment portion of this item, we will call on in-person commenters who have submitted a request to speak card, followed by those who have virtually raised their hand. Dr. Cliff, would you please summarize the item?
Thank you, Chair Randolph. The state law requires CARB to annually review and update the area designations for the state ambient air quality standards as appropriate. Therefore, based on a review of 2021 through 2023 air quality data, staff is proposing amendments to existing area designations for ozone, suspended particulate matter, or PM10, and fine particulate matter, or PM2.5. For ozone, staff recommends the board redesignate Shasta County in the Sacramento Valley Air Basin from non-attainment to non-attainment transitional. Additionally, for PM10, staff recommends the board redesignate Nevada, Plumas, and Sierra counties in the Mountain Counties Air Basin from non-attainment to unclassified. Finally, for PM2.5, staff recommends the board redesignate San Francisco Bay Area Air Basin from non-attainment to attainment. In summary, these changes reflect the current air quality in these areas, and staff recommends approval of the proposed changes to the state area designations. This concludes my summary of the item. Thank you.
Thank you. Board Clerk, have any witnesses signed up to testify on this item?
No commenters.
I will now close the record on this agenda item. The board has before them resolution number 25-1. Do I have a motion and a second?
Move approval.
All right. Board Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Dr. Balms.
Yes.
Mr. De La Torre. Mr. Eisenhut?
Yes.
Mr. Guerra?
Aye.
Ms. Hurt?
Aye.
Mr. Krakow?
Yes.
Dr. Pacheco Werner?
Yes.
Flores, aye.
Flores, aye. No, thank you.
Flores, aye. And call me in the room. Thanks.
Supervisor Perez? Mr. Rechtschaffen?
Yes.
Dr. Shaheen?
Aye.
Ms. Takborian?
Aye.
Chair Randolph?
Yes.
Madam Chair, the motion passes.
All right, thank you. Okay, the next item on the agenda is item number 25-1-4, PM2.5 Area Designation Recommendations for the Revised Federal Annual PM2.5 Standard. If you are here with us in the room and wish to comment on this item, please fill out a request to speak card as soon as possible and submit it to a board assistant. If you are joining us remotely and wish to comment on this item, please click the raise hand button or dial *9 now. We will first call on in-person commenters, followed by any remote commenters when we get to the public comment portion of the item. In this item, the board will consider staff's recommendations for which areas of the state should be classified, should be designated non-attainment, attainment, and unclassified for the latest federal annual fine particulate matter standard, the 9 microgram per cubic meter standard, based on the latest air quality data. When US EPA promulgated this standard last February, it started a one-year clock for states to designate areas and submit them to the EPA for their consideration. Once designations are finalized, the revised standard will initiate a new planning process in addition to the ones already underway for the existing PM2.5 standards. Dr. Cliff, would you please introduce the item?
Thank you, Chair Randolph. In February 2024, EPA strengthened the annual PM2.5 standard from 12 microgram per cubic meter to 9 micrograms per cubic meter based on an extensive body of scientific information and consensus of the EPA's Clean Air Scientific Advisory Committee, members that the current level was not sufficiently health protective. EPA's review of the PM2.5 standard builds on decades of scientific research clearly showing the harmful effects of PM2.5 on human health. States are required to submit designation recommendations and boundaries for non-attainment areas to EPA by February 7th of this year. Staff have reviewed the PM2.5 air quality monitoring data from 2021 to 2023, as well as information on the nature of the PM2.5 problem in each recommended region. As you will hear in the presentation, staff are recommending 9 non-attainment areas for the 9 microgram annual standard. EPA will finalize designations next year based on 2022 to 2024 air quality data. You will also hear in the presentation key milestones for the designation process, as well as for the state implementation plan development process that CARB will undertake in the coming years in partnership with the local air districts responsible for areas designated non-attainment with the new standard. I will now ask Mark Hickson of the Air Quality Planning and Science Division to begin the staff presentation. Mark.
Thank you, Dr. Cliff. Good morning, Chair Randolph and members of the board. Today I'll be presenting on California's designation recommendations for the new federal 9 micrograms per cubic meter annual fine particulate, or PM2.5 standard. In my presentation, I'll be covering the setting of the new federal PM2.5 standard, how exceptional events play a role, the areas we are recommending designating non-attainment, an overview of the state implementation planning process, and lastly, our recommendation for the board and what happens next related to this new federal PM2.5 standard. The United States Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA, sets national ambient air quality standards to levels protective of public health and public welfare. The EPA reviews the standards and underlying scientific and technical information available every 5 years. PM2.5 is harmful since the pollutant can easily get deep into the lungs and even in the bloodstream. There are clear health effects associated with exposure to PM2.5, including lung cancer, heart disease, and stroke, which result in hospitalizations and premature deaths. The revised PM2.5 standard was finalized on February 7, 2024, at an annual level of 9 micrograms per cubic meter. EPA set this value based on an extensive review of underlying scientific evidence showing that the current 12 micrograms per cubic meter standard was not sufficiently health protective, and a lower standard level would provide increased health protection. This new level would protect millions of Americans from harmful and costly health impacts from heart attacks and premature death. Across the nation, EPA determined that the strengthened standard would result in a significant public health benefit that could be as high as $46 billion in 2032. The standard is set through a robust multi-year public process. Once the standard is finalized, the Clean Air Act establishes a process that states and EPA must follow to designate areas, sets the schedule for state implementation plans, and attainment of the standard. The first step in this process is for states to submit recommendations for areas to be designated as non-attainment, attainment, or unclassifiable within 1 year of the standard. Since designations are considered a regulatory determination, the impact of exceptional events can be considered. Before I talk about exceptional events in the context of designations, I think it's important to acknowledge the wildfires in Southern California. These events are devastating and have impacted the lives and health of many across the region. We will continue to work closely with other agencies to understand and mitigate people's exposure to smoke and ash from those wildfires. For the purpose of today's board item, exceptional events such as wildfires can be excluded from the calculation of design value when designating non-attainment areas. However, smoke from wildfire events do remain a part of the air quality records. In EPA's view, wildfires and other exceptional events are not reasonably controllable by state and local agencies. When designating non-attainment areas for the new PM2.5 standard, EPA requires a demonstration documenting any days influenced by exceptional events like wildfires that are to be excluded from design value calculations for 2023. That means we look at air quality data for days potentially impacted by wildfires in 2021, 2022, and 2023. We are already reviewing preliminary 2024 air quality data to determine if any additional exceptional events negatively impact the 2024 design value. In identifying the proposed 9 micrograms per cubic meter non-attainment areas for California, we used the exceptional events process for one area. Siskiyou County was impacted by wildfires in 2021 and 2022, which made a difference in attaining the standard by impacting the 2023 design value. The photo on this slide highlights the significant amount of smoke in the area. Due to the wildfires, the PM2.5 design value was at 11.7 micrograms per cubic meter and is brought below the standard after the exceptional event impacted days are removed. The completed demonstration has gone through public comment period and has already been submitted to EPA ahead of the February 7th deadline. Preliminary air quality data from 2024 shows that Siskiyou County will attain the 9 micrograms per cubic meter standard without the removal of exceptional events. As shown on the map and table on the slide, we are recommending 9 areas to be designated non-attainment for the 9 micrograms per cubic meter standard based on air quality data from 2021 through 2023 from regulatory monitors, with the remaining areas of California designated either attainment or unclassifiable. Unclassifiable areas would be those areas where there is insufficient regulatory air quality data to determine the attainment status. The values in this table do not reflect the removal of any days impacted by wildfires or other exceptional events. The table lists the proposed non-attainment areas in order of 2023 design value from highest to lowest. Final designations will be based on PM2.5 design values calculated from 2022 through 2024 air quality data. Our preliminary findings from evaluating 2024 air quality data shows that Feather River and Sacramento will likely attain the standard as part of the final designations. As a result, we expect 7 areas in California to be eventually designated non-attainment of the 9 micrograms per cubic meter standard. As part of the designation process, the state must also recommend boundaries of proposed non-attainment areas. When determining the boundary for non-attainment areas, EPA's guidance provides a weight of evidence approach based on 5 factors listed here: air quality data, emissions, meteorology, geography or topography, and jurisdictional boundaries. CARB, in consultation with potentially impacted air districts, considered these factors in determining the boundaries. In most cases, existing non-attainment area boundaries were used. However, for a few areas, CARB developed new boundaries. We'll talk about each non-attainment area boundary in the following slides in the order they appeared on the table in the previous slide. For each of these maps in the upcoming slides, the non-attainment area boundary is shown in red, with the air basin boundaries in blue. County boundaries are a dashed line. Red pins are shown for monitors exceeding the standard, blue pins for monitors at or below the standard. We're not showing any monitors here with invalid design values. In the San Joaquin Valley, the air monitoring site with the highest PM2.5 concentration is in Bakersfield in Kern County, with a 2023 design value of 16.2 micrograms per cubic meter. I'll also highlight that this is a design value covering the years of 2021 through 2023. No exceptional events have been excluded. We are recommending the existing PM2.5 boundary for San Joaquin Valley non-attainment area that was last used in the designations for the previous annual PM2.5 standard be retained for this new standard. The Portola non-attainment area within Plumas County sits in an intermountain basin at 4,900 feet elevation, surrounded by mountains. The single regulatory air monitor in the city of Portola has a 2023 PM2.5 design value of 14.0 micrograms per cubic meter. Similar to the San Joaquin Valley, no exceptional events were excluded. We are recommending to retain the existing non-attainment area boundary established for the previous 12 micrograms per cubic meter annual PM2.5 standard. The South Coast Air Basin's highest design value site is 13.1 micrograms per cubic meter at the Ontario Route 60 Near Road Air Monitor. Near Road monitors are considered microscale due to the influence of pollution from passing trucks and cars, and are required for non-attainment areas with populations of more than 1 million people and on roadways with more than 250,000 passing vehicles. While microscale monitoring sites are normally not applicable to the annual PM2.5 standard, since they are required monitors to assess PM2.5 in a region, they can be used for regulatory determinations, including designations. We are recommending retaining the existing PM2.5 non-attainment area boundary used for the 12 micrograms per cubic meter annual PM2.5 designations. As mentioned earlier, preliminary 2024 PM2.5 data shows that the existing Yuba City Marysville non-attainment area does attain the standard. However, the non-attainment area recommendations we are considering today must be made using 2023 design value data. The single regulatory air monitor in this area has a 2023 design value of 11.2 micrograms per cubic meter, which puts it above the 9 micrograms per cubic meter standard. CARB will be recommending using the non-attainment area boundary established for the 35 micrograms per cubic meter designations, which contains Sutter County and a portion of Yuba County. If the final 2024 design value ends up being below the 9 micrograms per cubic meter standard, EPA should designate Yuba City Marysville as attainment. Mendocino is a proposed new non-attainment area that has never been designated non-attainment for any federal air quality standards. One regulatory air monitor in the city of Willits exceeds the new standard based on 2021 through 2023 air quality data with a design value of 11.0 micrograms per cubic meter. The city of Willits is located in the Little Lake Valley Basin at 1,400 feet elevation in the California coastal range, surrounded by ridgelines up to 3,000 feet. We worked with the local air district in establishing the proposed new non-attainment area boundary by considering the location of population, sources of air pollution, and topography. We used township range sections to encompass the area. We are not proposing expanding the non-attainment area to all of Mendocino County because the other PM2.5 regulatory air monitor in Mendocino County in the neighboring city of Ukiah to the southeast attains the standard. For Imperial County, a single air regulatory air monitor exceeds the 9 micrograms per cubic meter PM2.5 standard in Calexico with a 2023 design value of 10.2 micrograms per cubic meter. The recommended non-attainment area boundary for the new standard, which encompasses only a portion of Imperial County, is consistent with the boundary set for the previous annual PM2.5 standard. In Sacramento County, the highest PM2.5 design value is at the Bear Cut Air Monitor with a value of 9.9 micrograms per cubic meter, represented on this map by the leftmost red pin symbol. This is a near-roadway monitor representative of a microscale environment and influenced by car and truck emissions near the monitor. A second air monitoring site at Del Paso Manor, shown by the rightmost red pin symbol, also exceeds the standard. In establishing the non-attainment area boundary for the 24-hour PM2.5 standard, EPA included parts of surrounding counties as part of the non-attainment area. For this new standard, the air quality data did not justify including areas outside of Sacramento County. We considered all of the EPA criteria for establishing a non-attainment boundary for the new standard. Monitors in neighboring Yolo and Placer counties attain the standard, as does the Folsom Air Monitor in the northeast corner of Sacramento County. Meteorological data also indicates the sources impacting the Bear Cut and Del Paso monitors are within Sacramento County. We are recommending just Sacramento County as the boundary for this non-attainment area. The preliminary 2024 design value shows that the proposed new non-attainment area does attain the 9 micrograms per cubic meter standard. However, that data has not yet been certified. If the final 2024 design value is below 9 micrograms per cubic meter standard, EPA should designate Sacramento County as attainment. The highest 2023 design value in San Francisco Bay Area Air Basin is 9.6 micrograms per meter cubed at the San Pablo Air Monitoring Site, which is represented by the red pin symbol located on the western edge of Contra Costa County. A second air monitoring site at San Jose Jackson Street, represented by the red pin symbol in Santa Clara County, also exceeds the new standard. We are recommending that the existing 35 micrograms per cubic meter boundary encompassing the air basin is retained for this designation. Staff are recommending San Diego County be designated non-attainment for the new PM2.5 standard based on the 2021 through 2023 air quality data. The Sherman Elementary School air monitoring site is the high site at 9.2 micrograms per cubic meter. A second site in El Cajon also exceeds the standard with a value of 9.1 micrograms per cubic meter. Not shown in this map are additional regulatory sites near the border with Mexico. These sites do not yet have enough data to be compared against the standard. However, the Otay Mesa monitor near the border will have a valid design value in 2024 that we believe will exceed the 9 micrograms per cubic meter standard. For the new standard, we propose using the county boundary as the non-attainment area boundary, since this is consistent with what was used in designations for the 8-hour ozone standard. Now that we have gone through all of our recommendations for the new non-attainment area boundaries, I want to highlight the public process on these recommendations and this new standard in general. Starting in 2023, before the new standard was finalized, CARB staff began meeting with air districts through an ongoing monthly work group to prepare for the new PM2.5 standard. This work group will continue through the SIP development process for the next several years or longer if needed. CARB staff conducted two public workshops in 2024 on the designations, planning, nature of PM2.5, and emissions inventory updates to support the state implementation plans for this new standard. We released the staff report on the designation recommendations on December 13th, 2024 for public comment. We received public comments from air districts supporting the recommendations, as well as comments from some scientists questioning the health basis for the new PM2.5 standard. This meeting today serves as another opportunity for public engagement, but it is not the last opportunity for stakeholders to engage on the SIP development process for this new standard. We are still at the beginning of the timeline in this SIP development process for attaining the new air quality standard. The next significant milestone is February 7th of this year, when our recommendations for non-attainment area designations are due to EPA. Following that, EPA will send the 120-day letter to share their modifications to our recommendations. These modifications include the impact of air quality data from 2024 and EPA's assessment of non-attainment area boundaries. If we disagree with EPA's modifications to our recommendations, we have the option to respond in writing. EPA is required to issue final designations on February 6, 2026. For those areas designated as non-attainment, will all be classified as moderate initially, and their SIPs will be due 18 months after the designations are effective. The attainment date is the end of the sixth year from the final designations, or on December 31st, 2032. Areas unable to attain the 9 microgram per cubic meter standard by 2032 will be reclassified to serious non-attainment areas, which will extend the attainment deadline by 4 years to December 31st, 2036. The next step after identification and submittal of designation area boundaries to EPA is the development of state implementation plans, or SIPs, which will serve as the roadmaps for each of the non-attainment areas to meet the new PM2.5 standard. As mentioned in the public process slide, we have begun discussing the SIP elements with stakeholders. The diagram shows the essential elements of a SIP. Starting at the top with monitoring, we use air quality data both for designations of non-attainment areas as well as reclassifications, tracking progress, and attainment determinations. To the right, the emission inventories are essential for understanding the sources contributing to air pollution, as well as pointing the way to likely control strategies. Modeling, shown on the bottom, is our means to link emission sources to the observed concentrations and understand how effective control strategies are likely to be. Lastly, on the left, we have the control strategies that the state and air districts develop along with the federal government to bring an area into attainment. And back to the top, air monitoring data will show us if we meet the standard on time. In conclusion, staff recommends the board direct the executive office to forward California's recommendations for 9 micrograms per cubic meter PM2.5 designations to EPA, consistent with our Clean Air Act obligations. For the next 2 years, we will have focused engagement with stakeholders and public workshops on the emissions inventories and other elements of the SIP process. EPA will make final designations using 2022 through 2024 air quality data on February 6, 2026. Lastly, for those areas designated non-attainment, we will bring moderate SIPs to the board in late 2027, laying out the suite of actions needed for each of those areas to meet the 9 micrograms per cubic meter PM2.5 standard. And that concludes the staff presentation.
All right, thank you. We will now hear from the public who signed up to speak on this item, either by submitting a request to speak card or by raising their hand in Zoom. I will ask the board clerk to call public commenters.
Yes, we currently have one in-person commenter and 3 remote commenters. So we'll start with Craig Thomas.
Okay. Thank you to the chair and members of the board for this opportunity to speak with you. My name is Craig Thomas. I'm the director of the Fire Restoration Group in California. We are a small nonprofit that work collaboratively together with California Air Resources Board staff and air districts and people supporting fire and the management as management practices on this landscape. And we try to work on this tough stuff together. And we've been, I would argue, very successful in being able to get out of our silos and speak and work with each other. So I want to comment, first of all, and be really clear that the 9 microgram per cubic meter piece, PM2.5, as it relates to the application, things that we've created, whether that's automotive exhaust and tailpipes, whether it's brake and tire fiber, whether it's coal plant emissions, whether it's other forms of incineration that humans have created and constructed, with you 100%. And that was our comment letter to federal EPA when we wrote specifically about the new promulgation of the rule. Very supportive. Our big concern is when we lower that standard, the potential to be triggering more and more monitors in California while we try to do restorative burning and expand beneficial fire in California. That's the big concern. It's a future concern. It's a present concern right now because that standard's going to be in place. And yet we have state policy, the California strategic plan for expanding the use of beneficial fire as part of state California policy. I helped work on that document for a year. I also served on the National Wildfire Mitigation and Management Commission, 50 of us in the country, spent 10,000 hours together working on 148 recommendations under full consensus.
Thank you. That concludes your time. But now we'll...
Okay. I have a paper copy of a recommendation that I want to share with you.
Thank you.
So now we'll hear from our Zoom commenters. That will be Ruben Rodriguez, Christian Bisher, James Enstrom, Diane Flowers, Cynthia Pinto Cabrera, and Gustavo Aguirre Jr. So Ruben, I have activated your microphone. You should be able to unmute and begin your comment.
Hello. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can.
Awesome. Buenos dias. Mi nombre es Ruben Rodriguez with CCJN Central California Environmental Justice Network. Given the San Joaquin Valley's ongoing struggle to meet the less stringent 1997 and 2012 PM 2.5 standards and the significant challenges in achieving the new 2024 standard, apologize there. It is clear that a moderate non-attainment classification will not be feasible within the required timeline. However, since the San Joaquin Valley has requested extensions for both less stringent 1997 and 2012 PM 2.5 standard, it makes logic sense to pursue an initial serious non-attainment classification for the more stringent 2024 PM 2.5. The San Joaquin Valley is not only businesses and industry, but people, mother, fathers, elders, and all of our relations. Therefore, we strongly urge CARB Governing Board to request the EPA to reclassify the region as serious non-attainment. For too long, the agencies tasked with protecting the health of the Central Valley residents have failed to do so, and the consequences are dire for our children's future. And in that future, when asked by the children, why did you not protect them, will you be able to justify that you chose to favor industry over the health of the people? Now it is time for these agencies to do their job with integrity and conscience, to stand with those of the frontline communities facing this environmental crisis. The San Joaquin Valley has always been a key driver in California's economy, yet we are treated as a sacrificial zone. So the real question today is, will you participate in the continuing sacrifice by only recommending a moderate non-attainment classification? Thank you.
Thank you. Christian, I've activated your microphone. You can unmute and begin.
Good morning. My name is Christian Bisher with the Central California Environmental Justice Network and a resident of the San Joaquin Valley. An initial moderate classification is assigned when areas are designated non-attainment. However, I also very strongly urge the board to add language to the resolution this morning, asking the EPA to reclassify the valley as soon as possible to serious non-attainment, which they are legally allowed to do at any time. An immediate reclassification to serious non-attainment would allow the SIP for this new standard to be placed on the same level as existing valley PM 2.5 SIPs and eliminate the need for agency staff to spend time creating a moderate non-attainment SIP. This is done when the EPA believes an area cannot practicably attain a moderate area attainment date. Over 25 years, Valley SIPs have reduced annual PM 2.5 design values by 8.5 micrograms. And a moderate classification here is saying you believe levels can be reduced an additional 7.2 micrograms, or 85% of what has been done before, in just 6 years. SIP documents submitted to the EPA last year State of the Valley, doing the very best it could, knowing this new standard was coming, could just barely achieve the 12 microgram standard by the end of 2030. Allowing a moderate classification, an additional 3 micrograms would need to be reduced in a single year in order to achieve the 9 microgram standard by the end of 2031 or 2032, as CARB staff just said. We all know the San Joaquin Valley cannot meet this moderate attainment deadline by the new standard date. Please help eliminate unnecessary work on a moderate SIP when the attainment timeline cannot be achieved and ask the EPA to immediately reclassify the San Joaquin Valley as serious non-attainment in addition to the resolution today. Thank you.
Thank you. James, I have activated your microphone. You should be able to unmute and begin your comment.
Hello, my name is Dr. James Enstrom. I have over 50-year career as an epidemiologist, spent at UCLA. I'm currently president of the Scientific Integrity Institute in Los Angeles. And during the past 20 years, I've submitted comments to both CARB and EPA that there are no PM 2.5 deaths in California. And this invalidates the risk-benefit ratio regarding the need for a PM 2.5 standard. I've also published documents, papers that invalidate the original 1997 PM2.5 paper by Pope and the 1997 PM2.5 NACs. I have submitted numerous comments that are relevant to the improper process that's been followed the past 4 years to change the standard from 12 micrograms per cubic meter to 9. This process is going to be challenged by the new EPA. There is a serious problem with the measurements also of PM2.5 actual exposure. My monitor now in Los Angeles is reading only 1 microgram per cubic meter. I believe there's no accurate way of measuring this. Your estimates are just too far off. So this is all going to be challenged very rigorously and very scientifically, and I request that you pause this process. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Diane, I've activated your microphone. Please unmute and begin.
Let me see. Can you hear me now?
It's very faint, but we can hear you.
Hello. How's this better?
That's better.
I am a community member in the Harbor area of Los Angeles, Long Beach, and I'm very concerned about some of the things the person before me mentioned. I'm asking, what is the risk to our California standards from the new administration and the EPA and these sudden changes against regulation and improvement of the public health that are happening and threatening us? Are these standards going to be attacked that we're discussing today? Thank you. Or have they been?
Diane, are you still there?
Yes. No, I'm sorry. That was my question. What will happen if there are, if something is coming from Washington to get rid of what EPA said before about moving to 9? Is California going to be able to stay with 9, or are they going to do it just to go along with Washington? That's my very serious question for the lives of the people here.
Okay,
that's the end.
Great, thank you. Cynthia, I have activated your microphone. You should be able to unmute and begin.
Can y'all hear me?
Yes, we can.
Perfect. Good morning. Cynthia Pinto Cabrera, Policy Associate with the Central Valley Air Quality Coalition. Here today joining to urge the board to really stand with Valley communities and go beyond the staff recommendations for the San Joaquin Valley by recommending that US EPA immediately reclassify the Valley as serious non-attainment. The San Joaquin Valley is the most polluted air basin in the nation for fine particles, with a long history of failing to meet standards on time due to weak plans, over-reliance on incentives, and constant extensions. These failures have real consequences on our health, and the impacts stand to get worse from accelerated climate impacts, along with ongoing planning delays and weak enforcement. The 2012 PM2.5 standard extension from 2025 to 2030, the additional extension on the 1997 standard are just the latest examples of a lack of urgent action. In the 2024 State of the Air Report, the American Lung Association reported that between 2020 and 2022, Bakersfield had an annual average of 18.8 micrograms for annual PM2.5 concentration. Visalia had an annual average of 18.2 micrograms, and the highest days since 2000 of high particle pollution at 35.2 days. The Fresno, Madera, Hanford metropolitan area had an annual average of 17.5 micrograms. These concentrations have resulted in over 40,000 cases of pediatric asthma, 168,000 cases of adult asthma, 85,000 cases of COPD, and this is just in those three metropolitan areas. And it's clear that these plans are falling short of protecting the health of Valley residents, and therefore we urge the board to use its authority to go beyond business as usual and demand a stronger plan that brings the attainment deadline closer and ultimately brings relief to Valley breathers. Thank you.
Thank you. So next we'll hear from Gustavo Aguirre Jr. and Matt Holmes. So Gustavo, I've activated your microphone. You should be able to unmute and begin.
Hello, good morning, everyone. Gustavo Aguirre Jr., resident of Bakersfield, California, and director of Climate Equity and Environmental Justice, the Central California Asthma Collaborative. And as an organization that has seen an exponential growth in our organization due to the asthma education and remediation work that we do, although it's great to have our organization expand, is also very worrisome of how much more patients, how much more younger our patients are becoming in the work that we do in the asthma and the geographical reach that has extended to parts where we were not normally working as an organization. And so that just goes to showcase the worrisome that we have from a public health perspective. Again, I'm calling as an advocate to ask the board to recognize, you know, that really the limitations and request EPA to designate the San Joaquin Valley as serious attainment. You know, regarding the other speakers, not to repeat so much, but the 1997, the 2012 standards are already out on extension. You know, how much more far out can we compromise, right? And so I'm just calling to advocate for CARB and the board members to take the public health of the San Joaquin Valley as serious as other regions and go after the serious non-attainment for the San Joaquin Valley. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Matt Holmes, I've activated your microphone. Please unmute and begin.
Awesome, thank you. Yeah, Matt Holmes here with Valley Improvement Projects. Just reaching out to call on the board to for the serious non-attainment designation. I think we should take a lead from the Attorney General's office, who came out swinging when we're talking about how do we respond to the federal government. You know, calls for caution under these dynamics assume that we share any values of the federal government at this moment. So we're reduced to oppositional politics. So I'd encourage an aggressive stance on calling for non-attainment for the San Joaquin Valley. And then as far as our ways of knowing these areas of attainment, you know, we all know that the lines drawn on the map presented by technical staff today are irrelevant to human bodies and human lungs, especially when we move across them all day long. So there's really... the CARB has nothing to lose by being aggressive, but it can lose its credibility as the preeminent public health entity in this country. So I hope for a call for serious non-attainment across the San Joaquin Valley. You know, and if CARB can't lead on this, we're going to continue to end up with the calls like we had earlier, where people are outright delusional about whether or not there's a PM2.5 problem in this state. I'll settle with that. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes the commenters for this item.
All right. Thank you. Staff, are there any issues raised in the comments you want to address before I close the record? Okay. We will bring it to the board for discussion. Board members, do you have any questions? Is that Board Member Guerra or Dr. Shaheen? Board Member Guerra.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to thank the staff in the preparation of this report, and no real questions, but if anything, before this meeting, we had our SAC Metro Air Quality Management District, and the staff report really highlights, I think, the two things that we face here in the Sacramento Air Basin. One, obviously, with the bare cut monitor, the PM numbers of impact by heavy duty vehicles, the I-5, 50-80 corridors, an area where we have communities like Gardenland, Northgate, low-income communities who are affected by it, and also the Del Paso community that's affected by the industrial and business 80 and Interstate 80 corridor. So on that point. And then the other piece that both Sacramento faces, along with Feather River as well, is the challenges between both forest fires and then ag burning. And I think the staff report underscores, while it's not a component of this action or whatnot, the it underscores that we can't change the geography, we can't change meteorology or even jurisdictional boundaries, but what we can do is address prevention. And so it's important that I think that, you know, it's probably in the conversation for the next discussion that, you know, biomass utilization to address the issues that we face both in forest fires and also with the challenges with our ag industry, particularly in the north area, that we make sure that we start looking at those investments and prevention to make sure that we can reduce the PM numbers that are affected through wood smoke and from Shasta all the way down and Modoc all the way down to the Sacramento Valley. So with that, willing to support the staff recommendation, Chair, but I wanted to highlight the, I think that the staff report underscores the need in those two areas as affects the Sacramento Air Basin. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Balms.
Thank you, Chair Randolph. I just wanted to say for the public record how strong the epidemiologic and toxicologic evidence is for the association between ambient PM 2.5 and adverse public health outcomes, the most important one being cardiovascular mortality. The evidence is strong. There's evidence from California. There's evidence from across the U.S. There's evidence from across the world. Hundreds, if not thousands, of studies have supported the association between PM 2.5 exposures and adverse health outcomes, especially mortality.
Thank you. I was hoping you would share your expert opinion on that. I appreciate it. Board Member Takvorian. All right. Dr. Pacheco-Werner.
Thank you, Chair.
We can't hear you.
Thank you, Chair. I want to echo Dr. Baum's comments on the studies and reiterate that this is definitely a public health issue that is grounded in science. I want to talk a little bit about the San Joaquin Valley, just because giving attention to our commenters' issues, just for clarity in terms of our work moving forward on the plans. Talk to me a little bit about what is the difference in terms of how you move forward in your rigor of trying to find reductions in PM 2.5 in the San Joaquin Valley with a serious non-attainment versus the non-attainment that you have proposed today.
Yeah, maybe I'll start and then I'll turn it to staff. So it's my understanding that the classifications at the outset are always moderate area. If we go through the modeling process and determine that by the time that the SIP is due in late 2027, that with reasonable controls, we would not meet the attainment deadline of 2032, then it could be appropriate at that point to ask for a designation of serious non-attainment, but we would still have to go through the same process of determining what the conditions would be in 2032, which is the attainment date, with controls that we would be able to put in place. So staff, please correct me if I mess that up. Okay.
Dr. Cliff, you did not mess that up.
Thank you,
I just want to emphasize that this is a very clearly laid out process under the Clean Air Act and by US EPA. All non-attainment areas across the United States must go through this process. So it's not specific to California, and it's designed to provide to ensure that whatever SIPs are developed are fair for all stakeholders involved and that we do not overregulate in order to attain the air quality standards.
Yeah, that's really helpful in terms of understanding the process. And for me, I think, Chair, as we enter a new year, why things like a farmer and other efforts at the state level are so important in terms of cleaning up the valley's air. So I look forward to a robust engagement process where the ideas of some of our speakers are brought to light and where we are able to make sure that all of our plans, as they always have been, are robust. And I have seen it in the numbers. And I think, staff, if you can confer for the rest of the board, that there is PM 2.5 progress being made in the San Joaquin Valley. If you could just confirm that.
This is Michael Benjamin, Chief of the Air Quality Planning and Science Division. There is indeed progress being made in improving air quality in the San Joaquin Valley, perhaps not as quickly as we would all like, but as we look at those monitoring sites that no longer attain, we clearly see patterns where the number of sites no longer attaining is decreasing dramatically. We've shared those results with you in previous updates to the board. We'll be coming back to you this fall with an update on SIP implementation, not just for the San Joaquin Valley, but for South Coast, at which time we can share similar charts that will allow you to see how air quality has improved over time in those parts of California that are most impacted by air pollution.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Board Member Hurt had a follow-up question on that.
Thank you. I'll try to make it quick without getting a big setup, but as I'm listening to the comments and thinking more about what the future holds and knowing that there has been progress, but then we also have this challenge, at least in the San Francisco Bay Area, with vehicle miles traveled increasing and the concern about how steep the road is to get to attainment. I'm just wondering if we could speak a little bit to maybe the insight or the outlook on achieving attainment in face of increasing vehicle miles traveled and what we have to do to get there for a positive path forward or continued progress, rather.
Yes, so as we develop the SIP, we work very closely with colleagues across the agency who are developing other plans, for example, the scoping plan, and we think about how can we develop holistic strategies that will help us to attain our climate and air quality mandates. What we're seeing with vehicle miles traveled is, even though it is a challenge to reduce vehicle miles traveled, all of our efforts to electrify the fleet is providing significant benefits, and in fact, it underscores the importance for us to stay the course, to continue to electrify and move to zero emissions, such that even if we're not able to perhaps attain our VMT reduction goals, we'll continue to make improvements with air quality.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I had a question following up on the commenter who was talking about beneficial fire and exceptional events. Can you talk a little bit about the interaction? Are we allowed to consider beneficial fire as exceptional events, or is that sort of not necessary given the kind of amount of emissions from beneficial fire?
So we have been working very closely with stakeholders. Craig Thomas is a really valuable partner in this process. We have a very close working relationship with him, as well as with land managers and tribal representatives, on how can we increase the pace and scale of prescribed burning and cultural burning in California. It's clear from the wildfires that we've been seeing, the increasing frequency of wildfires, that the path forward is to have more prescribed burning, not less, while at the same time trying to protect public health and exposure to smoke. And so we have been working very closely on developing tools and approaches, training and collaborative efforts between all of these stakeholder groups for us to try to get as much prescribed fire on the landscape. As was discussed in the staff presentation, there is a process within the SIP for us to exclude the impact of wildfires as well as prescribed fires from attainment determinations. So we're on a parallel path here. We're trying to demonstrate attainment with the standards while at the same time recognizing that smoke in the air is a serious issue. We have to really address the issues with forest health. We have to ramp up prescribed and cultural burning. And through bills like SB 310 that was recently passed, which will really, I think, facilitate and streamline the permitting process and enable tribes to have a lot more cultural burning across the state, I think we're on the right path. And so I appreciate Craig Thomas and our other partners who've been working so closely with us in this process of trying to balance public health as well as forest health.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Board Member Takvorian.
Thank you. I had a question that's kind of on the other end of that, which is not about beneficial burning, but about wildfires and their I understand how they're utilized or not utilized in the designations. I'm wondering how they're referenced or those areas that are more prone to wildfires might be utilized in any regulatory processes that we have. Because clearly that we know they will continue to happen, and we know they will continue to happen in areas like Los Angeles and San Diego where we already have non-attainment. So I just wondered if you could talk about that a little bit in terms of what we might expect, for instance, when we approach the scoping plan and other regulations or plans. Sorry, not a regulation.
Good morning, Deputy Executive Officer Rajinder Sahota. Thank you for that question. And it's a very broad question that is going to have to be addressed on the air quality side and the climate side. In the last scoping plan, we integrated in wildfire emissions in a more meaningful way because they are one of the sources of greenhouse gases that need to be balanced when we think about the AB 1279 target for carbon neutrality. So the focus still has to remain on reducing the combustion of fossil fuels and the use of combustion technologies in general everywhere that we have these non-attainment areas and everywhere else possible. The wildfires are going to be unpredictable. We didn't know, even when the scoping plan was first done in 2008, that the pace and scale of these fires would be this fast and this catastrophic. And so we're all trying to pivot to understand what are the implications, what is the new data that's going to be coming in from the fires in Southern California, in addition to the data that we have, that can help us understand changes in terms of that urban-rural boundary for development, understand what kind of HVAC systems, other kinds of ceiling systems need to be in place in homes. And then there's just going to be a whole, effort to go back and understand what lessons were learned and what we need to carry forward. So there is no single answer because it touches so many parts of public health and economics of the state. And affordability.
I appreciate that. No, I know it's a big question, and there's a lot on all of our minds right now. We're trying to figure out how to integrate what's happening and what we know, and I think y'all are doing a really good job of that. I guess do you think then we would see more of that, those analyses or those predictive analyses be incorporated into some of the health analyses that we do as well, particularly like with the scoping plan and others?
So we've seen a wealth of information coming out on the economic and public health impacts of the wildfires that we've already seen, and we're going to continue to get that data. We're going to continue to incorporate it to make the case that we need to be more sustainably managing these resources, and here's the cost if we don't manage these resources. I think a big consideration is going to be, how do we make sure that we fund the work that needs to happen to manage these resources? Because it's not just state land, it's also a federal land issue, and then it's also private lands in the state. So there's multiple stakeholders that have a lot of ownership of these working lands and natural landscapes. So I think the challenge will be recognizing the scale of the issue and how it's just going to continue to get worse for probably the next few decades based on some of the modeling that came out of the scoping plan. And how do we pivot to make sure the resources are there and we're able to manage prescribed burn, cultural burns, and also any thinning that needs to happen?
Thank you. I really appreciate your response. I would also add local government land, because that is everywhere. And often there aren't the resources to manage those lands, and they're right on top of residential communities. So, as you know.
Thank you. Okay. The board has before them resolution number 20. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Eisenhut. Go ahead.
I'd like to offer first a comment and then a question. I want to offer my support to the comments made by Mr. Benjamin with regard to preemptive burning as a and the tension between preemptive burning and forest health and public health. And as a forest dweller, I'm aware that generally preemptive burning is conducted on calm, non-windy days when the smoke lingers and it's terribly annoying, but it's also, I believe, a better option than the fear of an August or September conflagration. So I appreciate your comments. I'd like to, one of our commenters earlier asked a question that is somewhat hypothetical, but I believe increasingly real, and that is what is our expectation? Are we prepared to address the issue of where US EPA is headed, or is this too premature for that conversation?
Well, we're certainly aware that the new administration has flagged several issues for US EPA to evaluate and present recommendations. So I think we're following that closely, and we'll develop our response as we understand more. So it is a bit premature at this point. We certainly recognize that there's the possibility of a number of actions, including that on air quality standards, that could be on the table for consideration.
Board Member Guerra.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Benjamin and Mr. Gender prompted up both a comment and a question here. The voters passed Prop 4, and there was some money set aside there for forestry mass. And I don't know how this agency or this board has engaged yet on that process. But at least when I looked at the preliminary budget proposal, there wasn't any significant or large amount of money as what was proposed in Prop 4 for the issue of forestry management. I saw some of the Tahoe Conservancy, some of the Department of Conservation, but not at the magnitude that was presented to the voters. So I think, one, from an air quality standpoint, I think we need to be, vocal about the need to have that money released sooner than later, particularly the $50 million for biomass utilization. Because as Mr. Benjamin said, that we don't have a choice. We have to balance out the ag burning and the fire burning at the same time. So, I hate to sound like a broken record, but I mean, those are our options. And so if we don't have that new technology that gives us a viable alternative to that, then I think we're still exposing smoke to people, period. I mean, whether it's in the calculations or not, the smoke is still exposing folks. Now, on the concern that I have here, and maybe this, if there isn't an answer today, one thing we've experienced in the Sacramento Valley is a higher increase in the amount of disease amongst the rice, and so the need to burn that is going to be probably more apparent this time around. So where does the calculation affect our attainment in that scenario? And is there an exemption for that? And if there isn't, then how do the air districts, that there's about nine of them that are affected through that area?
Yes, this is Michael Benjamin. So back in the 90s, actually, one of the first parts of California where it was determined for public health reasons that we needed to phase out or significantly reduce ag burning was in the Sacramento Valley, where every fall there was widespread burning of rice straw after the harvest. It resulted in very significant public health impacts, and it was decided at that time to phase out almost completely rice straw burning. It was widely supported. There was state funding provided for alternatives for both growers and to encourage markets for rice straw. And that phase out of rice straw burning has continued to the present day. It's resulted in dramatic improvements in air quality in the Sacramento region and all of the surrounding counties. And I would say it's one of the successes from an air quality perspective. What we've been seeing with the phase out of ag burning in the San Joaquin Valley is the similar sort of challenges of how do we continue to provide tools for growers to be able to mitigate disease. There is a, within the San Joaquin Valley ag burn phase out, an option for those fields where it's been demonstrated there is disease that burning can occur. And so there is an avenue within the current process by which growers on a very limited basis can burn fields where there's evidence of disease. So I think, again, this is an example of where we have tried to balance the needs of the growers as well as public health and people exposed to smoke. So I think that's something that can be addressed through the current process.
Okay, very good. And to that point, you know, again, if there's disease, then that's the option that we have. But as we're, when that is occurring, and we have on top of that the normal process of ag burning, I guess it underscores again the need for really prevention on new technology to look at that amount of fuel that's out there. So thank you, Chair.
All right, thank you. The board has before them resolution number 25-2. Do I have a motion and a second?
So moved.
Second.
Board clerk, please call the roll.
Dr. Balms.
Yes.
Mr. De La Torre.
Yes.
Mr. Eisenhut.
Yes.
Senator Flores.
Flores, aye.
Mr. Guerra.
Guerra, aye.
Ms. Hurt.
Aye.
Mr. Krakow. Dr. Pacheco-Warner?
Yes.
Mr. Rechtschaffen?
Yes.
Dr. Shaheen?
Aye.
Ms. Tekborian? Chair Randolph?
Yes.
Madam Chair, the motion passes.
All right, thank you. Okay, the last item on the agenda is item number 21-1-5. A report on the California Air Resources Board's program priorities for 2025. If you are here with us in the room and wish to comment on this item, please fill out a request to speak card as soon as possible and submit it to a board assistant. If you are joining us remotely and wish to comment on this item, please click the raise hand button or dial *9 now. We will first call on in-person commenters, followed by any remote commenters when we get to the public comment portion of this item. For many years, it has been a practice for the executive officer to make a presentation to the board each January outlining the priorities for the agency for the coming year. As we enter 2025, the work of the California Air Resources Board has never been more critical. The impacts of climate change are accelerating, with extreme weather, wildfires, and air quality challenges becoming more of a day-to-day reality for residents. Cleaning the air and taking action on climate change are not just environmental imperatives. They are essential to protecting public health, fostering economic resilience, and ensuring a sustainable future for all Californians. CARB remains steadfast in its mission to address these challenges through innovative policies, technological advancements, and a commitment to equity, ensuring that all communities, especially those most vulnerable and most impacted, benefit from our efforts. Our climate and clean air policies can also help address affordability challenges by reducing healthcare costs, lowering the total cost of vehicle ownership, and fostering the growth of new industries and jobs. We remain committed to working with our partner agencies and the legislature to help identify ways to make this transition affordable and accessible to all Californians. As we continue to work toward our climate and air quality goals, we stand ready to collaborate with all of our stakeholders and partners, including with the new federal administration. I'm hopeful that we can find some common ground in supporting the innovation, job creation, and economic growth that come with a clean energy economy. By working together, we can continue to position both California and the United States as global leaders in the clean technology space. But we recognize and we are determined that if and when challenged, CARB will vigorously defend California's authority to set standards necessary to protect the public health and well-being of our communities. The right to breathe clean air is not a political or a partisan issue, and climate change is impacting communities everywhere, in California, across the country, and around the world. We will not compromise on our commitment to safeguarding the air we breathe and confronting the climate crisis head on. While I recognize the uncertainty that comes with administration change, one thing is certain, CARB will continue to make progress on California's significant air pollution challenges. We will continue our critical work to address climate change and implement the key policies that we need to tackle both of these issues. As the fifth largest economy in the state, we will not cede California's position as a national and world leader in building a clean energy economy. CARB is ready to continue its legacy of effective action to protect public health and the environment. Dr. Cliff, I will turn it over to you for this item.
Thank you, Chair Randolph. And I want to thank, in particular, Dr. Chen Mitloner for the help in putting this presentation together, as well as the entire CARB team for all the hard work that they have done to set me up for this presentation. And yes, as you allude to, we do anticipate that in, if we can go to the next slide, please, in 2025, we bring unique challenges as CARB continues to drive towards progress, fulfilling its mission. Today, I'm going to start by addressing two specific areas of challenge head on: the transition in federal administration and the impact of California's budget challenges. And sorry, I jumped ahead one slide, but that's okay. We'll stay on this slide. It is no secret that the new federal administration has previously attacked California's programs to protect public health and the climate, and has stated its intention to continue its effort to roll back our programs and authority. In light of this, last Monday, CARB withdrew the remaining requests before the US EPA for waivers and authorizations to enforce key California transportation regulations. And while we're disappointed that the US EPA was unable to act on all the requests before them in time, we knew that keeping pending requests before the new federal administration would create undue uncertainty. I will talk more about our path forward in light of these withdrawals a bit later, but know that we will be considering additional alternative courses of action, particularly those that can be carried out under state authority that will allow California to continue reducing pollution and protecting the health of its residents. As we enter this new federal administration, we do so with eyes wide open, having gained experience from Trump's first term that equips us for what lies ahead. During the first Trump administration, we engaged in estimated 25 litigation cases related to federal actions aimed at defending our actions and authorities. As a result, a key priority for CARB this year will be to hold our ground, defending our authority under the Clean Air Act. Our legal team is closely tracking court cases and preparing to respond proactively to defend against attacks to undermine our authority. Another challenge we face in 2025 is something shared by departments across state governments, which is the realities of California's budget challenges. Last year's enacted budget includes reductions to all state department budgets, including the elimination of vacancies and an almost 8% reduction in state operational budgets, which includes contracts, procurements, and other types of operational expenditures. With these cuts, timelines for certain activities will have to be extended, and there will be certain activities we can no longer support. CARB has weathered budgetary challenges before, and we know it will be critical for our organization to be disciplined in how we spend our increasingly limited resources, prioritizing our most impactful efforts. Amidst the challenges we face in 2025, CARB remains steadfast in our mission to address California's air pollution problems and lead effective climate action. As a part of that commitment, CARB will continue our efforts to address historical inequities and deliver tangible benefits to communities disproportionately impacted by air pollution and climate change. This includes using tools we have developed, such as the racial equity lens and community engagement model, to inform decision-making, effectively engage with impacted communities, and to ensure those impacted by structural racial inequities are meaningfully involved in the creation and implementation of CARB's work. To continue to make progress towards that mission, CARB will be focusing on implementing key existing programs while also developing new programs and regulations. Together, these efforts will deliver meaningful results to improve air quality, address climate change, and pave the way for a more sustainable and inclusive future. Before highlighting key programmatic priorities for 2025, I want to take a minute to recognize the foundational support that makes these initiatives possible. Behind every priority outlined in this presentation lies an iceberg under the water, the dedicated administrative staff who help support the human resources, the fiscal resources, and the information services of a 2,000-person organization. Their work underpins not only the priorities we highlight in this presentation, but every aspect of what we do. With that, let's turn to a few existing efforts that will remain key priorities in 2025. First is our California Climate Investments Program. Last year, California Climate Investments celebrated a decade of progress with more than $11 billion of cap-and-trade auction proceeds invested throughout the state. More than 75% of those investments are providing direct benefits to disadvantaged communities and low-income communities and households. In 2025, the California Climate Investments will continue collaborating with 27 state agencies across the more than 110 programs, supporting projects in clean energy, affordable housing, public transit, short-lived climate pollutants, and nature-based solutions. Through this collaboration with administering agencies, the team plans to continue to prioritize efforts to help ensure benefits reach the most disadvantaged and low-income communities and households, including increasing access for tribes and unincorporated communities. The team will also be focusing on uplifting economic opportunities and climate resilience efforts throughout the portfolio by supporting high-quality jobs, enhancing affordability, and assessing climate risks and adaptation benefits. Another key priority in 2025 is continuing to support the Community Air Protection Program. Through collaboration between air districts and CARB, we are seeing real and meaningful reduction in emissions and exposures to air pollution in California's most disadvantaged communities. 19 selected communities representing over 4 million people, a quarter of the population identified as disadvantaged under Cal EnviroScreen 4.0, are working to develop or implement CARB-approved community emission reduction programs. As of May 2024, over $550 million of community air protection incentives have been invested statewide, Of these funds, over $215 million have funded more than 4,500 projects within those 19 communities. For 2025, this program is expected to reach several milestones. Later this spring, staff will bring to the board a slate of candidates for the AB 617 consultation group, award close to $16 million in community air grants to community-based organizations and tribes, and launch a peer-to-peer learning series. This summer, the board will hear a report on the program's annual progress. And later this year, the staff will also update the Community Air Protection Incentive Program guidelines and continue to support the statewide mobile monitoring initiative in consistently nominated communities. Next, I want to highlight our transportation and off-road efforts. The transportation sector remains the largest source of air pollution in California, making continued progress in this area central to CARB's mission. We have received several long-awaited waivers and authorizations from US EPA granting CARB authority to enforce key regulations. At the end of 2024 and early 2025, CARB received 6 waivers and authorizations granting CARB authority to enforce regulatory packages that will drive significant pollution reductions in passenger car and heavy-duty vehicles. Of note, the federal waiver for the Advanced Clean Cars 2 regulation allows California to fully implement and enforce requirements that would move the state towards 100% sales of zero-emission vehicles by 2035. This year is noteworthy for ACC2 because manufacturers will produce and sell the first set of vehicles that meet those requirements. In addition, this year, CARB staff will bring proposed amendments to the board for consideration to clarify certain provisions related to ZEV certification and to continue CARB's progress in supporting the ZEV market with new consumer-focused assurance measures. CARB will continue implementing and enforcing these 6 regulatory packages, which will also include the heavy-duty omnibus regulation that will drastically reduce smog-forming emissions, particulate matter, and nitrogen oxides from heavy-duty vehicles, as well as requirements for cleaner off-road engines, small off-road engines, like lawnmowers and leaf blowers, off-road vehicles, and the authorized portions affecting commercial harbor craft and refrigerated trucks. As I mentioned previously, last week we withdrew the remaining authorization requests before US EPA, including the Advanced Clean Fleet Regulation and the In-Use Locomotive Regulatory Package. For both of those regulations, CARB is evaluating next steps. For ACF, CARB is not enforcing the parts that require federal authorization, such as the portions that apply to high priority and drayage fleets. However, not all elements of the ACF regulation require a federal waiver or authorization, such as the state and local government fleets requirements, which CARB will be implementing and enforcing. We remain committed to achieving the goals laid out in the governor's 2020 executive order, establishing a goal that 100% of medium and heavy-duty vehicles in the state be zero emission by 2045, where reasonable, and by 2035 for drayage trucks. We will evaluate the next steps to continue driving toward this goal. At the same time, we have the Advanced Clean Trucks Regulation, which received a waiver in 2023, as well as the Clean Truck Partnership, which is an agreement made by the nation's manufacturers to reach 100% zero emission sales by 2036, both of which are critical tools to help us reach the governor's goals. Now let's transition to new initiatives and regulations CARB will be prioritizing in 2025. Short-lived climate pollutants like methane are powerful climate pollutants with global warming potential that are tens to thousands of times greater than that of carbon dioxide. In 2025, CARB will take additional efforts to slash their emissions, including updating the landfill regulations and progressing the methane satellites data project. Decomposition of organic waste at landfills emits methane and makes landfills the second largest source of methane emissions in California. Under the Early Action Landfill Methane Regulation of 2010, California landfill operators are required to install and operate gas collection systems at landfills to capture and use fugitive methane. This year, staff will propose regulatory updates to the regulation to improve emissions monitoring, leverage more recent technology developments, improve gas collection systems operation, and improve administration of this regulation. CARB is also leveraging innovative technology through the Methane Satellite Data Project, which uses advanced remote sensing to detect large methane leaks in California and globally. One philanthropically funded satellite was launched in August of last year, and CARB anticipates awarding a $95 million contract in the coming months for additional data. With this unprecedented information, CARB will start notifying operators in 2025 so swift action can be taken to address identified leaks. To support this effort, CARB has amended its oil and gas methane regulation to require oil and gas facility operators to act promptly upon notification of methane plumes. And we are also exploring similar provisions as part of the landfill methane regulation amendments. In addition, CARB plans to release a $5 million community grant program solicitation to engage communities in interpreting and responding to plumes detected in their areas. Another priority for 2025 is focused on updating planning targets to reduce the need for vehicle travel. SB 375 requires California's Metropolitan Planning Organization regions to develop sustainable community strategies aimed at reducing greenhouse gas emissions from passenger vehicle travel to help achieve the state's climate goals. To guide these strategies, CARB sets a GHG reduction target for MPO regions, which must be updated at least every 8 years. The current target update process is underway and must be completed by next year. To support this, staff will host a second statewide public workshop in the second quarter and plans to release a draft report with target recommendations for public review and comment in the third quarter of this year. This year, we also plan to support several efforts to advance climate action. We are prepared to support the administration and legislature as they consider extending the cap and trade program beyond 2030 to achieve carbon neutrality. We will also be conducting rulemaking activities to support carbon capture, utilization, and storage, as well as corporate GHG emissions reporting and corporate climate financial risk disclosure, as required by SB 905, SB 253, and SB 261. Respectively. The state's leadership in these areas is critical to attract funding for innovation and technologies needed to achieve carbon neutrality by 2045 and to provide public transparency on how large corporations are responding to the science of climate change and acting to do their part to reduce GHG emissions. Over the coming months, staff will be holding workshops on the implementation of these bills through rulemakings and welcome broad participation. Ensuring affordable and equitable access to transportation fuels will also be a key priority for 2025. In late last year, CARB received a letter from Governor Newsom asking the agency to prioritize the multimedia evaluation of E15, which is a statutory requirement for CARB and other CalEPA departments to evaluate potential air, soil, water, and other impacts when considering whether to modify regulations allowing ethanol use in California gasoline to increase from 10% by volume to 15%. The governor's proposed budget includes needed resources to support this effort. In addition, this year we will continue to coordinate with the California Energy Commission to engage the public through community meetings and ongoing discussions with the legislatively created working group on the development of the transportation fuels transition plan required by SBX-1. Looking ahead to 2025, we face an array of unprecedented challenges, but these obstacles will not deter us. As Barack Obama once said, "You don't choose the time chooses you." This year, CARB and California have been chosen to stand at the forefront to defend clean air, science-based public health protections, and climate efforts against what we expect will be a concerted federal assault. That is the part we must play. To meet these challenges, 2025 is going to require a level of discipline from us to stand our ground and remain focused on the core activities and programs that deliver tangible results in improving air quality and combating climate change. It will also demand resilience from all of us to adapt to an evolving landscape and the creativity to explore new, innovative approaches, something that CARB does very well. This is an effort that spans across the entire organization. Every division, every team, and every one of you will play a critical role in ensuring CARB remains a beacon for environmental leadership. I am grateful to all of the almost 2,000 staff for their hard work and dedication, and look forward to rising to the challenges of 2025 together. And in closing, we'd like to share a short video that highlights the transformative power of the community air protection as told by the members of the Portside Steering Committee, bringing to life the impact of our work and the stories of the communities that we serve.
Living in Logan Heights is amazing in the amount of culture that I get to live in. I just see my culture around everywhere. The amount of community that I feel when I'm here as well. Everyone is somehow family or a friend.
Me gusta esta comunidad porque inclusive se encuentran mercados donde puedo comprar productos mexicanos. Yo soy mexicana de nacimiento.
It's a vibrant cultural hub. Has amazing history and a history rooted in community coming together and resisting forces that were set to do them harm.
Unfortunately, living close to these polluted areas like paint shops and auto bodies, metal supplies, it's across the street. I mean, a block away from an elementary school. I think, in my opinion, it was a bad decision by authorities where the industrial zoning was right next to residential. Unfortunately, that has been going on for so many years that it has affected us. And I'm getting that trigger, like I said. After a few years in early 2000s, I was diagnosed with asthma.
One of the biggest things I pride myself, I think, in our community is our resilience and our strive to want to better our own neighborhood.
The Portside communities were selected for the Community Air Protection Program in 2019. One of the major reasons why the Portside communities is really because of an ongoing and present legacy of environmental injustices and harms.
Our main goal, our mission is to create better air quality and reduce, of course, the pollution that is surrounding us.
El rol del comité directivo es opinar y dar nuestro punto de vista, qué es lo que queremos para las comunidades.
The Community Steering Committee is a community-led group, but it also includes public agency staff, and it also includes industrial stakeholders as well.
To have a space where not only are we able to voice those concerns, but be on an equal level with other people and have our opinions valued is just, it's so empowering.
I see the collaboration with the CSC and having their input as a very insightful part of our planning process. We take their input and that makes our projects better.
The Port of San Diego is an active member on the Portside Community Steering Committee. The Port recently adopted a maritime clean air strategy, which is our ambitious plan to advance new technologies at the port and reduce emissions.
Doing things like electrifying the trucks that are coming into the port that drive down our community, having the equipment and cranes and devices that they use on the port be electrified.
Proyectos de desvío de camiones son importantes. Porque entre menos cerca se estén pasando los camiones de donde hay áreas residenciales o escuelas.
Many of the goals and objectives the community advocated for, we were able to build into the plan. The Port of San Diego is proud to partner with one of our tenants, Crowley Maritime, to bring the first all-electric tugboat in the United States here to San Diego Bay. This electric tugboat contains 6 megawatt hours of battery power on it. and will reduce 30,000 gallons of diesel a year, which will radically improve air quality in the Portside communities.
Este hubo este programa del programa PER, este ha ayudado a que muchos residentes han recibido este filtros. Yo desde que me involucré en la coalición de salud ambiental y he estado ahorita en el comité de ABC 17, me he involucrado por mi familia, este, aprender y saber cómo prohibir este que haya contaminación.
CBOs, these organizations are a very important part of educating our community. We did a lot of advocacy on our behalf in regards to the PER program. It has helped us here in National City in regards to the quality of air that we are receiving in our homes.
Este, hubo una ordenanza este, que se aprobó para que se le llamó la amortización y es para reubicar talleres dañinos en la comunidad y también prohibir que vuelvan a entrar talleres a nuestra comunidad. Tuvimos un logro, nosotros le llamamos una gran victoria. Este, hemos luchado mucho con la amortización de reubicar los talleres y sacamos a uno que estaba enfrente de la escuela Kimbo, que era muy dañino y era de taller mecánico.
But we know that not all the rules that we have on the book are covering what the community needs in terms of reducing air pollutants in their communities. So sometimes that might mean developing new rules or looking at older rules and updating them to ensure that the community is as best protected as much as possible to ensure clean air for all.
What I would like for my community to know is that you are the experts of all of this.
I have a lot of experience in advocating in outreach, but this was on a different level.
Pues yo me siento muy contenta porque veo que ya no nada más somos poquitos, ya más gente se está uniendo.
Us living here, we know everything that is required to make the positive changes. And I just urge you to just take that leap of faith and join and or reach out and ask questions.
Although I was motivated, educated more, I also motivated others and inspired others. So I think it's a great gift in my opinion.
Thank you for sharing that video. And I want to thank the participants, the CARB team who helped put that together, and of course our work with the air districts, and especially the communities involved in help making these stories really inspiring, and appreciate that. That concludes my item.
All right. Thank you so much. Okay. We are going to hear from the public who signed up to speak on this item by submitting a request to speak card or by raising their hand in Zoom. And I will ask the board clerks to begin calling the public commenters.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have four in-person commenters. We will start with RJ Lemke.
Good afternoon. My name is RJ Lemke, and I'm representing Happy Days RVs, which is my family's business. It's proudly served California for 50 years, as well as the California RV Dealers Association. Here to voice my strong concerns about the inclusion of motorhomes in the advanced clean air and the omnibus regulations. While I support California's mission to reduce emissions, grouping motorhomes with semi-trucks and heavy equipment is unfair and impractical. Motorhomes are recreational vehicles, not commercial workhorses. They're used seasonally or intermittently, averaging fewer than 2,000 miles a year, which makes their emissions impacts negligible at best. Applying these regulations to motorhomes does little to achieve clean air goals while creating significant burdens for both consumers and the RV industry. Additionally, California recently dropped its regulations phasing out diesel trucks and requiring cleaner locomotives measures, which would have had a far greater impact on emissions. It's hard to understand why motorhomes, which make up a tiny fraction of emissions, are still being targeted while much larger sources are being abandoned. The economic implications are also troubling. The RV industry generates generally around $500 million annually in California, supporting local businesses, jobs, tourism. Overregulation risks pushing customers out of the state to buy, harming local dealers, reducing tax revenue, and threatening the viability of our industry. These policies could drive costs up, pricing many families out of RV ownership. I urge the board to exclude motorhomes from the ACT and omnibus frameworks. Let's focus on sectors with greater potential for emissions reductions and protect small businesses and consumers while still advancing California's environmental goals. Thank you.
Thank you. Melina Rochin?
My name is Melina Rochin, board member of CalRVDA and COO of ET Quality RV, a family-owned business that has proudly served our community for over three decades. I want to highlight some critical considerations regarding the practicality and unintended consequences of the ACT regulation on the RV industry and working-class families. One major challenge is a significant difference in utility between a full tank of gas on a truck hauling a trailer and a full charge on an electric truck. The range and convenience offered by gasoline and diesel-powered vehicles make weekend camping trips and long-distance RV travel feasible for families. Current electric truck models, even at full charge, cannot match the range or refueling speed of traditional vehicles, creating logistical challenges for RV owners. This limitation disproportionately affects working-class families. The increased costs associated with transitioning to electric RVs, coupled with a lack of charging infrastructure, risk pricing these families out of recreational travel altogether. As a result, the economic impact on our industry could be devastating. Additionally, it's important to contextualize the emissions produced by RVs and the trucks that tow them. These vehicles are not used daily. Their emissions are a fraction of those generated by other sectors. Meanwhile, California's wildfires emit far more greenhouse gases and harmful particulates than the entire RV sector. In 2020 alone, wildfires in California released more than 100 million metric tons of CO2, an amount that dwarfs the emissions of RVs and towing vehicles. Addressing wildfire emissions by investing in forest management and the fire prevention strategies would have a far greater impact on air quality and climate goals than targeting a niche market like RVs. We believe CARB should focus on comprehensive solutions that address these broader issues while supporting the transition to cleaner technologies. Given the minimal emissions contribution of RVs and their unique usage patterns, we strongly urge CARB to consider excluding RVs from the ACT regulation altogether. This approach would prevent unnecessary economic burdens on families and small businesses while allowing the industry to pursue cleaner technologies at a realistic pace.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Evan Edgar.
Hello, board members. My name is Evan Edgar. I'm the engineer for the refuse industry. There are 16,000 public and private refuse fleets in California. Half are public, half are private. Other half are on RNG with a carbon negative intensity of minus 119. Other half are on renewable diesel. We are the early adopters. We are the clean technology with near zero NOx. We are the carbon negative folks that make our own energy with anaerobic digestion. We create jobs today, not tomorrow, and we're going to lose those jobs maybe. We are the circular economy of today, and we're being penalized as being early adopters. Plus, as part of the Cal EPA report, we are the most cost-effective solution for climate change is the development of anaerobic digestion facilities. In February 2023, when you guys adopted the Advanced Clean Fleet Rule as a resolution to talk about the future of biomethane, to quote the board resolution, we were going to prioritize policies discussions related to SB 1440 recommendations, discussions how to transition biomethane into the hard to decarbonize communities. That workshop was never held. I've been up here for 2 years trying to get that workshop held. We don't make biomethane for hard to decarbonize communities who are late to the game. We're early adopters since 2020. From South San Francisco to Inland Empire, we are making carbon negative fuel today. And the future of biomethane is that a lot of our facilities are not on a PUC pipeline. The public sector under the Advanced Clean Fleet Rule, also the wastewater guys. And they really worked hard to get this workshop about what is the future of biomethane when you're not on a PUC pipeline. We don't make fuel for the tomato processing plant in Modesto. We make fuel for our own fleet that's carbon negative with zero neo NOx. So I stand here asking you to prioritize that for 2025, seeing that 2 years later, you guys haven't held that workshop. So please hold that workshop, and the RNG forever people, we want RNG forever. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Will Barrett.
Good afternoon. I'm Will Barrett with the American Lung Association. Really happy to be here to start the year with you. Certainly, CARB's leadership and innovative approach to clean air policies are critical to meeting healthy air standards, for addressing health equity concerns, as well as pushing towards a healthier climate. Certainly, the lack of waiver approval across the board is very concerning, as Dr. Cliff noted, especially on the locomotive and advanced clean fleets fronts. We see this as a clear need for CARB to fully embrace and fully implement all existing policies and really look at all authorities that California has to clean up the air. A key example of this is really the need for addressing these SIP gaps for NOx tons, looking at our legacy fleets, whether, you know, across the board, looking at in-use testing and more frequent intervals for all in-use testing opportunities to really identify high emitters earlier. We see that in the heavy-duty inspection and maintenance program that has just kicked off successfully. We know that that's going to increase testing intervals down, intervals down the road, and that'll save hundreds more lives in the base of massive health benefits of that program. So just in-use testing and legacy fleets is a key point I want to make. Also, in the presentation, really encouraged to see the focus on opportunities to reduce time stuck in traffic, vehicle miles traveled reductions that are critically needed to meet our clean air standards, to meet our climate standards. And this week, 65 organizations across California through the Climate Plan Network wrote a letter to all California state agencies, CARB included, as well as the transportation agencies, to really put a fine point on this, that we need to make more urgent and rapid progress on VMT reduction, on meeting our SB 375 vision that California has had but has so far not materialized, to build healthier communities and more efficient and more affordable mobility options for all Californians. So with those two things, I just wanted to kind of kick off a few, you know, areas where we think that our shared mission of public health protection really can advance even under these current circumstances we're in. So keep up the good fight, and thank you very much.
Thank you. We will now move into Zoom. Matt Holmes, I have activated your mic. You may unmute and begin.
Awesome. Thanks so much. I want to start by thanking Executive Officer Cliff for that update on programs. I want to echo your call for drawing a protective circle around the Office of Community Air Protection, despite the many growing pains in this process that we've all been through. It's absolutely enabled meaningful change in how many of our communities relate to the state. The Office of Air Community Community Air Protection has only grown CARB's credibility under its current chief. I also want to express my gratitude for that the remote sensing methane satellite is finally getting its regulatory debut. Some of you may remember that the authorization of these funds were really dead in the water until impacted communities reversed our positions on, and that was on the condition that the data would be meaningfully available in real time to our methane polluted communities. Real-time access is easier than withholding it, so that's the good news. Real-time enables pragmatic emergency response strategies in the communities, and it also helps us to control for really a lot of bad actor local agencies that are really uninterested in helping with this problem. That's a serious problem, and it's a problem that should be really escalated within the scoping plan. I just want, knowing that the delay was frustrating for many of us, the work never stopped, and the extra clock has afforded us the opportunity to develop our academic and philanthropic partnerships to ensure that the original conditions on this funding instrument are observed. So I want to close encouraging the board members that they have all the authority necessary to unilaterally direct this funding to communities that are most burdened. The Department of Finance rituals around what's really an outdated and competitive grant-making framework continue to admit bad actors into the monitoring and enforcement space, which only further marginalizes impacted communities. And I want to close by thanking Board Member Krakow for really diligently helping us stay on top of this issue. I know it hasn't been easy. This is something that we can really help lead the country and lead the nation on, so long as we keep the right people in the center of this conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bill McGovern, I have activated your mic. You may unmute and begin.
Thank you very much. Bill McGovern with the Coalition for Clean Air. Appreciate the presentation and the video. And really want to thank Dr. Cliff for leading off his list of 2025 priorities with the landfill methane issue. The existing rule on landfill methane emissions is too weak and outdated, and we need to take advantage of technology that exists now to do a better job of detecting leaks and also set a tighter standard so that we can better control this short-lived climate pollutant that CARB has been addressing through a number of measures and which the legislature recognized in SB 1383. We now have two giant holes in our plans to reduce diesel emissions in California because of EPA's failure to approve the locomotive and advanced clean fleets rules. And I want to echo Will Barrett's comments that we can partly fill those holes. Nothing will do it on its own, but we need to focus on retiring the oldest diesel trucks and expedite that rulemaking that is in your SIP plans, and also have more frequent in-use testing to catch more of the excess emissions. I also urge you to move forward on the rulemaking processes, which have started now in their early stages, to reduce emissions from ocean-going vessels and also from airport ground operations. Look forward to working with you on all of these processes and many more in the coming year. Thank you.
Thank you. Clayton Munnings, I have activated your mic. You may unmute and begin.
Yeah, thank you. Clayton Munnings with Elevate Climate, speaking in my own capacity. So CARB's update to its cap and trade program has suffered a number of delays, which is casting uncertainty over the market, having three negative consequences. First, the uncertainty over regulation delays climate action. Taking climate action is important not only to reduce the number of additional wildfires, but also to ensure we hit our state greenhouse gas goals, given that we know wildfires emit greenhouse gas emissions. The update on the cap and trade program is poised to remove 1 billion allowances from the market, thereby reducing 1 billion tons of additional greenhouse gas emissions through 2045. It would do so as cost-effectively as possible, thereby limiting concerns regarding affordability. And the existing regulation has provisions to protect electricity ratepayers. Second, uncertainty over the regulation freezes climate-friendly investments into California. Investors look at the allowance price to decide if climate-friendly investments are profitable or not, and volatility around that price freezes additional climate-friendly investments. And third, uncertainty over the rulemaking weakens allowance prices, which has led to lower auction revenue. This is important because of Dr. Cliff's statements regarding the Climate Change Investments Program, which relies on cap and trade revenues. It's also important given some of Governor Newsom's plans to use cap and trade revenues to backfill either the budget or backfill subsidies that Trump may roll back. So in conclusion, I urge CARB to release the update to its cap and trade program, also known as the Initial Statement of Reasons, or ISOR, as soon as is feasible. Thank you.
Thank you. And this concludes our commenters for this item.
All right. Thank you. This is an informational item, so there's no need to close the record. So I will open it up to board members for questions or comments. I did have a question on the comments around RVs. Could you talk a little bit about how ACT and omnibus affect RVs?
Yes, Chair. Thank you. Really appreciate the commenters coming to today. I'll just note that it's actually when we do these updates, I don't remember ever having public comment on the EO update previously, so I feel pretty special. Noting that, the comments regarding RVs, we really empathize with the industry, and we have heard concerns related to RVs repeatedly. I will note that this board took really important action last fall to help improve and streamline the implementation of the Advanced Clean Trucks regulation. We also have been working really closely with the manufacturers regarding how they implement the omnibus and advanced clean trucks regulations. You'll remember that we sent a memo last year kind of detailing our analysis there. We really believe that advanced clean trucks should not have any constraints on the RV industry. And we actually have on our website a myth versus fact sheet that's been posted that kind of goes through this. We do know that now manufacturers are actually taking advantage of provisions in the regulations that allow them to purchase credits, and noting that there are sufficient credits to comply with the Advanced Clean Trucks regulation for at least 2 years that are already in the marketplace. So there should be absolutely no constraints. In addition, there's no reason that, in fact, RVs should be chosen as the first out the gate type of vehicle that would be targeted by the regulation. The regulation has very modest implementation expectations. As I mentioned, we already have more credits than are necessary for a couple of years of implementation. So there are a lot of opportunities to electrify certain parts of the market, and we have been working with the manufacturers to target those first. We understand that manufacturers in some cases would prefer that for every type of industry that they electrify and that it ensures that they're always in compliance, but the regulation does not require that. So as I mentioned, we are seeing certain manufacturers take advantage of the credit provisions, and then noting that in addition, the amendments that the board took action on last year would allow manufacturers, including secondary manufacturers such as those that make RVs, to take advantage of purchasing credits. So if ultimately that becomes a constraint on the marketplace, that they could purchase credits and then hand those off to OEMs in lieu of actually buying electrified product if those are not yet available in the segments that that they serve.
So to be clear, the rule allows manufacturers to continue bringing those engines to market in California, given the flexibilities in their compliance strategies, right? There's no like category that says you have to electrify RVs. You can sort of decide your strategy in terms of compliance and which engines you choose to bring into the state. Is that correct?
That's right. It's completely flexible. It's based on the total sales of vehicles, some percentage of those increasing annually will need to be zero emissions. That's how the regulation works. So it doesn't specifically target any particular sector. And that's why there are more credits than are necessary, because many sectors are starting to electrify, and especially those that are in that kind of medium duty category, delivery trucks and some other work trucks that are already being electrified. So those are the categories that are being targeted first. In some cases, what we're hearing, and this is part of what's the concerns that were brought today, that manufacturers have said, we would prefer to have every single vehicle type we sell meet that percentage. And if there is no electrified product in that category, that's where the constraint comes in. That's not a requirement of the regulation. And we do think that opening up that credit market to a broader class of manufacturers will allow RV manufacturers to buy credits to comply, or the original equipment manufacturers can then start taking advantage of the credit provisions in the regulation, as well as electrifying those trucks that make sense first.
So could I ask staff to do one more round of conversations with the manufacturers, given the changes we made in October, and just sort of, you know, remind them again of these flexibilities and get some information from them about how they are reacting to the October changes?
Yes, absolutely. And I'll just note those changes aren't technically in effect yet. Of course, you guys did agree to the regulation and approved that. We're still going through the process to finalize that through the Office of Administrative Law. We expect that to be completely updated later this year, but those provisions will be in effect in the coming months. But we will do that next round of conversations.
Thanks. Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, Dr. Shaheen.
Thanks so much. And Dr. Cliff, thank you so much for the update. I wanted to hone in on the really important conversation about VMT, which has been raised several times. So I know we've got, I think, a very important action in summer of 2026 associated with the SB 375 updates. And as I recall from our November briefing, the board got together and we heard a lot about the SESs, the targets, the role of, I think, streamlining guidance around methodologies and methods, that there might be some inconsistencies. So I was curious, do we have ongoing communications with the MPOs at present in advance of the 2025 workshop? You know, ultimately where I'm going with all of this is we've got to get the data right, the methods right, but we also need to get to implementation to get the VMT down, to get the GHGs down. And I know there's been a call for action to get more towards implementation, but I think we've got to address both, right? Is how do we get to actions that are really going to count and prioritize them as part of this process, but also get to a place where we have better data, better methods, more consistency in how the reporting's done. I know it was a lot, but thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Shaheen. So to your question, yes, we do have an ongoing dialogue with MPOs, and we also include other state agencies, the California Transportation Commission and Caltrans, in those conversations. And there have been there's dialogue both at my level and at Chanel's level, as well as staff level conversations that are ongoing. So we are trying to work with MPOs, making sure that we both understand the concerns in how they report information to us and how we account for reductions to meet the targets that have been set by this board, as well as continuing to update our reporting requirements. So under SB 150, we do have to provide a report annually on the progress towards implementing the targets. And we're continuing to refine that. We have a dashboard online that has a lot of information that's available to ensure accountability there. The challenge is, as MPOs are continuing to implement SESs, we also need to work on updating those targets for the future. And so we're kind of doing both simultaneously. They're in various phases of developing sustainable community strategies. We're developing new targets, and then each of the MPOs that has submitted those SESs, we're evaluating. And so we're kind of on this constant cycle of update, evaluate, and then make progress moving forward. Unfortunately, I think our SB 150 reports have shown that we're not making the progress that we expected, certainly during the pandemic. Vehicle miles travel reduced, but the report continues to show that we're not making the progress that is necessary to achieve our climate objectives. And that will be ever more important, especially in the face of what we expect to be rollbacks in the federal administration's support of our priorities, including not only the waivers and authorizations, but the potential for impacts to incentives for zero emission vehicles. So we're watching all of that very closely. And of course, working closely with MPOs and other stakeholders to try and advance our objective and our mandate to reduce VMT and greenhouse gas emissions in the regions.
Thank you. Thank you for that. And I'd just like to underscore again how important this is. The VMT is not on track, and that's a fact. And we really need to work together and, I think, get action and implementation out there, including reinforcing the role of public transit and reducing VMT. Thanks.
Thank you. Board Member De La Torre.
Thank you. Mine are just two things that I want to highlight. It's not a question or anything. One is the heavy-duty trucks and the transition to zero-emission trucks. I want to be clear that our commitment in that regard, the transition to zero-emission trucks, is unabated. There was one thing that isn't going to happen, at least partially, As Steve mentioned, we will continue to do ACF for government fleets. So that piece is still there. But we still have, in terms of incentives and regulations, and this is not an exhaustive list, we have at the state level greenhouse gas reduction funds, Carl Moyer funds. The California Energy Commission has funds for this transition, whether for the trucks themselves or for the infrastructure. We have LCFS credits. So all of that remains, and the commitment remains. But it isn't just us. At the local level, we have air district funds. We have port funds. Even transportation agencies, local transportation agencies, have funds for either the trucks or the infrastructure or both. So all of that is unabated. It will continue, absolutely. On the regulatory side, we have the Advanced Clean Trucks Rule, which is a thing. It is not changed in any way, shape, or form. In fact, we have all of the manufacturers signed on to an agreement to that effect, regardless of regulatory actions. We have the truck and bus rules for emissions, which are getting lower and lower and lower to the point where zero emission is a better path for a lot of folks than continuing with the diesel. We have our heavy-duty truck smog check program that is really starting to pick up steam. And we have, I mentioned the ACT government fleets. So, and there's others. This is just a sampling of our commitment that is not changing in any way, shape, or form, and we will continue to move towards the governor's goal that he laid out in 2020, prior to ACF, that we will transition to zero-emission new truck sales by 2035 for drayage, and 2045 for all. And I know there's a date in between too that I don't remember what category we're doing in between. But all of that is still moving ahead and absolutely a priority for me personally, and I know for my colleagues on the board. The second is a follow-up to our conversation in November. I want to keep this in front of staff. I know there's still discussions going on, but clean cars for all. What I didn't know in November, I know now, is that there are only two of the five air districts that are short of money. San Joaquin has run out already, and Bay Area is about to run out any day now. So those two are the ones that need the help, not all five, in this fiscal year. And so that's just, you know, again, putting that forward to make sure that we're working on that solution as well. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Board Member Guerra.
Thank you, Chair. Very briefly, again, I want to echo the concern that Board Member De La Torre mentioned. And we had a very, lively discussion last time. But here we are again on that point where we have, two air districts in a position where on a very successful program where the public and those that are involved know how to access it, that reliability is essential to make sure that we keep going. And I wouldn't want to be in our region here in our air district area to find us in that same situation. So I think this needs to be responded to this year and making sure that those districts have the funding and support for the Clean Cars for All program. So I'll leave it at that, and a lot of work ahead.
Dr. Pacheco-Werner.
Yeah, thank you. I think that I definitely just want to start on this, that I really feel like our priorities are very, very sound and for this year. And I look forward to working with staff to making sure that those are accomplished and risen to the front of other priorities at the state and federal level as well. One of the things, and then in particular, the continued commitment to community engagement, because I think that yields better results for everybody in terms of our trying to prioritize the most impactful efforts. I think to that effect, I do also want to echo that we need to keep in mind the resolution and continuity around Clean Cars for All and ensure that those entities don't have to roll in and out, because that also creates larger confusion and lessens the potential impact of these programs when they have to start and stop. So want to continue to emphasize moving forward on that end as well. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Well, thank you very much for that presentation, and appreciate all the work that went into the presentation and the video. And since we don't need to take a vote on this item, we can move on to open public comment.
Thank you. We currently have one in-person commenter, Evan Edgar.
Good afternoon, board members. My name is Evan Edgar. One word, leakage. Two words, blood batteries. I'll be talking about those. I've been promoting the European Battery Directive for the last 3 years when the European Union adopted it. And since that time, there's been really no movement. There are three aspects to the European Battery Directive. One is supply chain due diligence, verified carbon intensity, and recycling. On the recycling bill, SB 615, the governor vetoed that. So apparently it's okay to throw ZEV batteries into the landfills because there's no recycling law. Number two, SB 1018 Quirk Bill had to have a verified third party for the carbon intensity of manufacturing and charging ZEV batteries. That bill was killed by CARB staff and committee because it cost too much to know the truth. Even the union concerned scientists opposed it because nobody wants to know the truth about zero emission vehicle batteries because they're not zero. The carbon intensity is plus 20 as provided by Ricardo that works in the European Union implementing the European Battery Directive. California should follow that. And number three, the biggest one is supply chain due diligence. That has to do with scoping plan with minimizing leakage. Where we call it zero emissions in California, we're leaking our emissions, both criteria pollutants and greenhouse gases, onto other people. From the plains of Argentina with lithium dust to the kids' slave labor, cobalt in the Congo, they're mining artisanal minerals to do blood batteries. EJAC supports this. I've been in front of Environmental Justice for 3 years. They support the three initiatives. I've been in front of you for 3 years talking about this, zero input for zero emissions, about leakage. The scoping plan says to minimize leakage. You're encouraging leakage. Where is environmental justice for all? Not just free cars in Fresno, but what about the rest of the world?
Thank you.
Who killed the carbon negative fleet?
Thank you. We will now move to our Zoom commenters, starting with Teresa Bowie. I have activated your mic. You may unmute and begin.
Great. Thank you so much. Hi, this is Teresa Bowie with Pacific Environment. Happy New Year to all, and thanks for the opportunity to comment. This is actually on the previous item, the 2025 priorities. I had my hands raised, but had some internet outage. Thank you to Steve for sharing CARB's 2025 priorities. Now that EPA approved the majority of the Harborcraft rule, we want to continue working with you all on the robust implementation and enforcement. And we view that the LCFS plays a critical role. And we would love for CARB to provide more explicit information on how hydrogen dispensers can get credit under the Harborcraft. And then in terms of the LCFS is an important role in transitioning fleets and new vessels into new fueling pathways and infrastructure. And so we wanna, you know, we're grateful to CARB for its commitment to adding marine fuels for the next round, and want to make sure that it's as robust as possible and not allow for false solutions like liquefied natural gas. I also want to echo Bill McGavern's comments on the ocean-going vessel rulemaking. We are so pleased that you guys are tackling the biggest emission source at the ports.
Given that we are seeing record wildfires and all the attacks on environmental protection at the federal level, state leadership is needed more now more than ever. And so for the in-transit rule, we want to work with you all to accelerate the rulemaking so that port communities can breathe cleaner air earlier and to make it as robust as possible. We are standing by and looking forward to working with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Greg Herner, I have activated your mic. You may unmute and begin.
Hi, this is Greg Herner on behalf of Miller Industries, and they wanted me to provide an update on product availability for tow trucks. We provided this update to staff yesterday. I didn't talk on the last item because this is not about moving forward. Miller has worked with four different manufacturers to try and develop a zero-emission tow truck, but there are no options that meet the legislative mandates and the requirements of the California Highway Patrol to operate those on the road. Of note, we purchase from nearly all manufacturers, so this isn't about a particular manufacturer. But with the changes you approved and the discretionary enforcement, we were supposed to be able to see an increase in chassis available. At this point in 2025, the known allocations are less than half of 2024, or about 10% of what we would have in a normal year. Class 8 is worse. The lack of availability is so severe right now that we had to get a customer to give up a truck so that we could move it to someone that they needed to fulfill a contract with the Freeway Service Patrol. Board members, this is when the shortage of chassis starts to impact the safety of the motoring public and first responders. When we can't get newer, safer, lower emission trucks on the road, it's going to impact all of those services. And recall, UC Berkeley has found that the Freeway Service Patrol actually reduces emissions and saves motorists money. As I mentioned, we talked to staff yesterday to give them this update. We're hopeful that we can find a resolution. We went through many topics, and I'm happy to go through many of those, but we really need to find a solution quickly because there is no optimism and people are starting to try to figure out what they're going to do as far as jobs in California.
Thank you. And that concludes our open commenters.
All right. Thank you. I wanted to take a moment to make a retirement announcement after 16 years as CARB's chief counsel and an extraordinary 48 years practicing law. Ellen Peter has decided to retire at the end of February. Ellen has been a wonderful, hardworking, amazing leader who has made a significant and historic contribution to CARB and its mission that we have spent so much time talking about today. She's been instrumental in our enforcement and legal efforts, working on cases that have absolutely shaped environmental and regulatory policy in California. She has mentored many amazing attorneys and has helped build a strong legal team within our agency and a strong enforcement team as well. Ellen's dedication, steadfast determination, and strength have been invaluable to the state of California's emissions reduction efforts, and she will leave behind a very hard-to-fill space here at CARB. And so I wanted to make sure and congratulate Ellen on her amazing career, begin several months of thanks for her service and congratulations to the state of California and celebrations of her amazing work, and wish her well in her incredibly well-deserved retirement. I personally am so fortunate to have been able to work with you here at CARB for the last 4 years, and you will be very, very, very missed. So thank you. And if there are any other board members who'd like to say a few words, please do. I knew Cliff would want to say something.
Well, thank you. I've known and had the pleasure of working with Ellen for over 20 years, previously at the California Attorney General's office, and she is a incredibly tenacious, pragmatic, collaborative and super effective advocate and a pleasure to work with. And having experienced the trauma of two hostile previous administrations under second President Bush and President Trump last time around, I can't imagine how we're going to get through this third trauma without you, but best of luck. You've more than served your time for CARB and the people of California.
Dr. Balmes.
Well, as the longest serving board member, I actually started before you. But it's always been a pleasure to work with you, both because you're always nice and congenial and always give very direct advice whenever I'm about to screw up. So I appreciate that. And you definitely will be missed, and we wish you the best in your retirement. Continue to enjoy life.
Member Takvorian.
Well, if it were possible, I'd make a motion to deny this request for. But
you've tried.
Yes, I know. I just want to express my huge appreciation, and I really have enjoyed getting to know you as a CARB member for the last 6 years. But I met you as an environmental justice advocate, and just want to say on behalf of myself, but I believe that many in the movement really feel strongly that you were an open ear and someone who really fought on behalf of our communities and really fought for environmental justice long before it was a popular phrase. So I really appreciate that and all your service in all the different places that you've been in the state of California, including, of course, CARB. So good luck, and I hope you enjoy birds and lots of travel and lots of fun. Thank you, Ellen.
All right, Dr. Pacheco-Werner.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Ellen, I'm so sorry I can't be there in person. And I'm also not sorry to not share this cold I have with you. But I just wanted to say that for those in the room and those listening, I mean, what a true servant Ellen has been. And your time in legal services, which if anyone knows anything about legal services, it truly takes a servant's heart to start your career in that space. And so I have seen what you've done here at CARB and have actually been privileged enough to be part of your mentorship. So I can only imagine how well you've mentored your staff and know that they are ready to take the baton. And I am glad that you are now in this next phase in your life to really enjoy life, and I know that you'll be rooting for us, and I am sure that you are still going to get called on and answered, and I know you will pick up the phone because that's you, but also feel free to put it on silent every now and then too. Just thank you so much for all that you've done for Californians and through your legal services work as well, for those that needed that representation the most. What a brilliant career, and I know that you are such a great mentor and that we are in good hands. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Ellen. I know you will have an amazing retirement. You and Dan will be able to spend more time together, and you will be, off to New York, I'm sure, on a even more frequent basis to see your daughter. So we will miss you. And as Dr. Pacheco-Werner mentioned, we'll probably be hanging on to your ankles via your cell phone. Ellen, Ellen, Ellen. Thank you for your service on behalf of the people of California.
Great. Thank you, Leanne. And thanks for all the kind words from all of you. And both here and just this morning. I really, really appreciate it. I want to acknowledge my husband, who's here. Leanne referenced Dan, who's been a supporter of me working for so many years and continuing for all these hours, and would joke on those Volkswagen things, what's our percentage cut, here? And we would what the lawyers do. What's your percentage? So any event, not any. But anyway, I wanted to just say for the past 5 decades, CARB has done some amazing things to improve public health, address climate change, and just keeps on going. And I've just had I really appreciate the opportunity to spend these last years with you to help move that forward. And as Steve said out already, we all have a lot of challenges in front of us. But I think that with this very committed board and this very outstanding staff, that we'll get there. And so just once again, thanks very much for the kind words, and thanks for the support for me in this position. And
all right. Pursuant to our published agenda, the board will now break for closed session, and then we'll reconvene after closed session to adjourn the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Please come to order. The board met in closed session and no action was taken by the board. The January 23rd, 2025 CARB board meeting is now adjourned. Thank you.